Hi, this is Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
And welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, 21st December this year marks the end of the Mayan long count calendar. And that's a cycle of about 5,000 years that actually comes to an end on the 21st. And of course, it sparked all these fears of the end of the world. And there's been reports of people buying up tinned goods in China, but also stocking up their survival shelters in America. And Australia's PM even got in on the act as well. She recorded a bit of a spoof where she wished everyone the best as they faced their fiery end in a zombie apocalypse. Go Julia. Now, the way that this end of the world is all going to happen is just a bit vague. It varies from predictions of collisions between Earth and various kind of planets and other things like comets or solar storms, but maybe even the awakening, the spiritual rebirth of a bunch of people as well. Now, Simon, this isn't the first time that people have predicted the end of the world, is it?
No, we get this sort of thing quite often, actually. Predictions that things are about to come to an abrupt and rude halt. Inevitably, it comes to nothing. Now, with the latest one, the Mayan calendar, some are taking it as a joke. Others are cashing in with tourist events and parties and so on. And others, of course, are taking it more seriously.
It does strike me that this idea of the end of the world is a really persistent one in our popular imagination. This kind of Armageddon scenario, we're always thinking about it, aren't we?
Yeah, there's a guy who writes for The Guardian in the UK, and he says how there's this common theme of Armageddon is used in literature, and fantasies of catastrophe are all over the place, and they change according to whatever it is that's bothering us at the time. So for a while there, post-industrial revolution technological progress was the thing that was going to bring us to an end. Then we split the atom, and of course that sort of the apocalyptic literature went through the roof then with this sort of post-nuclear Holocaust scenario. There's been other things. The outside influence, the aliens, meteors and that sort of thing's always been there, but it seems that currently it's the sort of environmental catastrophe that people are worried about. And so it's self-inflicted, and it's, you know, it's our fault as much as anyone else's. So it's led to this sort of subgenre of apocalyptic literature. It's all over the place, very popular.
Yeah, you mentioned environmental apocalypse. This is actually subtly suggested in Cormac McCarthy's The Road, or at least the filmic version that was made. And that's a real great example of this kind of post-apocalyptic gloom and despair, isn't it?
It is, yes. Book and the film, it's in that. These last days scenarios are throughout all literature, and you get things like in art, like Michelangelo's Last Judgment on the Sistine Chapel, with these sort of horrible, grotesque, frightening images of an end. And there's lots of films as well.
Yeah, actually, as you were going through listing all those things that that have changed the way that we view apocalypse, I was thinking of all the films in relation to that. And you've got films like On the Beach, Dr. Strangelove, even Planet of the Apes that have this whole nuclear Holocaust scenario. There's also the idea of a global pandemic, like a virus. So, for example, 12 Monkeys, even something like 28 Days Later, which is kind of like a zombie film, but is that as well. But even something like WALL-E has this kind of spectre of environmental destruction over it. It's this idea that we've trashed the planet, and so that's why we've had to go elsewhere. So it actually ends quite a somber note to a really kind of nice kids film as well. But there's also films like Terminator, The Matrix, this real sense that our technology is what's going to be the end of us as well. So that's also this idea of a self-inflicted, you know, end of the world or an end of the human race. Now, what do you think makes these stories so popular? You know, how do we and why do we have this fascination with Armageddon?
Lots of people think about this, sort of write about this. Perhaps it's the human idea of a sense of an ending. You know, we feel like we are significant enough that we can't just go out with a whimper. That where there needs to be this sort of great big fight at the end, and the sort of the chance for some form of redemption, and also the justification that our lives meant something. And it seems a strong current in popular imagination. It leads to some good films and books too.
Now, we asked people on the street what they thought of the latest doomsday scenario, the end of the calendar. And so let's have a listen to what they had to say.
The people are saying next Friday is the end of the world. What do you make of that? Is that freaking you out?
Nah, I don't think so, mate. I don't think it's going to be the end of the world, but I think, I don't know, I'm not really into that stuff, so.
If for argument's sake, you did think next Friday was going to be the end of the world, what would you do this week?
I wouldn't be at work, I'll tell you right now. I'd probably be going away or something and trying to party, I'm not sure, catching up with family and friends.
Maybe travel more or something, but like, that takes time. If it's the end of the world, what can you do?
Skydiving, sorry, and racing. And get together with my family at the end of the day and, you know, hopefully if that happens. I don't believe it will happen, but just in case, you know.
Well, if it is going to end, I would take this time to say sorry to the people that I couldn't say sorry. Some of the things that I kept in my mind, like, you know, without saying, like, you know, just to say that. And maybe, like, you know, spend some quality time with my family and the ones that I really love. Even though it's just 1 week, I would like to spend it in a bit of a meaningful way. Rather than thinking that it's just 1 week and we can do whatever we want, it's not the way. So maybe, I mean, to be as happy as possible. Like, you know, you don't have to, like, you know, do extraordinary things to be happy. There might be some small things which might bring you a lot of happiness. So I might engage in one of these things.
Yeah, definitely go home, see family, live it up before the world ends. You know, be the only way to do it, really. Now, some pretty interesting responses there. No one seems to be taking it too seriously.
No one we spoke to thought this was of any concern.
Now, how about we move to the idea of the Bible? Because the Bible seems to loom large in these discussions of apocalypse. The Book of Revelation particularly is responsible for quite a lot of the, I guess, images that we might have of the end of the world. Now, I know that you've been, Simon, to the site of the, you know, supposed final battle, Plains of Megiddo, is that right, in Israel. Can you give us an insight into what the Bible has to say about, you know, the end of the world?
Yeah, well, the Book of Revelation plays into the thrill and intrigue that surrounds this sort of writing, and Revelation 16 is a real case in point.
The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. Then I saw three evil spirits that looked like frogs. They came out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. They are demonic spirits that perform signs, and they go out to the kings of the whole world to gather them for the battle on the great day of God Almighty. Then they gathered the kings together to the place that in Hebrew is called Armageddon.
As you mentioned, Justine, I've stood on the hill that looks over the plain that many people believe is going to be the location of the final battle of Earth's history, described as it is in the Book of Revelation. So the term Armageddon comes from this mountain of Megiddo, or Armageddon. And the region of Megiddo was an ancient battleground, so people knew it to be that. So if the writer of Revelation was alluding to this ground, it's significant for Israel and therefore made it an appropriate setting and background for this great last battle.
And so what can we learn about the end of the world from Revelation and Armageddon?
Yeah, well, you've got to be careful with your reading of this, is the first thing to say. So the Battle of Armageddon comes at this really important point in Revelation. It's part of what they call, what we know as the Sixth Bowl Plague. And the forces gather for the battle, and it leads to the fall of Babylon, which is outlined in the Seventh Bowl Plague. Now, people sometimes take from this idea that there will be an end of the world with an intense battle between the armies of heaven and the kings of the earth, and that'll lead to the earth's devastation. That's another important element of this. And there are various Bible passages to support this. Zechariah 14, Ezekiel 38, and as we mentioned, Revelation 16. Although it's interesting to note that in the Bible, the word Armageddon occurs only once.
Yeah, so you'd imagine that there's a risk, right, of reading too much into it.
Yeah, the notion of Armageddon is sometimes read rather too clunkily, I'd suggest, and placed where it doesn't belong. So when people try to work out which earthly forces will fight the Lord in the final battle, I think you can be getting a bit off course. So this was famously written about in Hal Lindsey's book, The Late Great Planet Earth, which identified the battlers who were on God's side being the Western nations, and the devil's charges would be 200 million Chinese. So you get the sort of feel for the way this sort of thing can happen. Yeah. These days, people it tends to be, you know, the Muslim nations against the West, and lots of, you know, Armageddon types websites talk about the Iraq War being the beginning of all of this. And you can see how that sort of reading provides an easy way to make the God on our side type of argument. But when the Bible talks about the battle to occur at Megiddo, it's a lot like when Jesus refers to Gehenna as hell. Now, Gehenna was the rubbish dump outside of Jerusalem. And so he uses a physical place that his hearers knew that had connotations of destruction and fire and so on, and to explain what the nature of end times will be like.
We often forget that while the Bible is like one big account of what God's done in the world, it's also at the same time a collection of different books. And, you know, as you've said, you're supposed to read some of these historically, but some of these also as poetry perhaps as well. So, you know, how should we read this material?
Well, you have to remember that this type of literature, the sort of thing we're getting in Revelation, is what we call apocalyptic. And there are a couple of examples of that in the Bible. This material just isn't a map for the history of the world, wars, present and future, and whose side God's on and so on. It's better to think of it as like a great cinematic production. There's lots of symbols being enacted of a reality behind the symbols, using, in this case, images of battles that people could relate to and so on. So John, who writes Revelation, gets this vision in symbols, like a film with fantastic costumes and so on, wild sets and that sort of thing. Now, the people or the powers that are represented don't exist in their wild costumed form. Jesus, if you read the book there, Jesus is depicted as a lamb with seven horns and seven eyes and so on, Revelation 5. That doesn't mean he's actually like that. The people reading it understood that, right? So it's more like things he has wisdom and strength and he's the sacrificial lamb, that sort of thing. We don't read Revelation 15 and 16 and go looking for these seven angels holding bowls full of horrible stuff, okay? But what we do get is a symbolic representation of the awful reality of judgment. It gets our attention too. It goes through just our thoughts and into our emotions and our imaginations.
Yeah, it seems that this apocalyptic literature is laden with symbolism, and people know, because they're familiar with the genre, that numbers and colours have symbolic importance, and things like historical events can be represented by earthquakes and floods and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's good to get help with reading this stuff. If you just pick it up without that sort of knowledge and start reading it, it's pretty weird. It's wild stuff, right? And it sort of plays into people's imaginations. And I guess if you're sort of more drawn to conspiracy theories or predictions of the end of the world, then you'll kind of read it in those sorts of ways. So apocalyptic sets the present in the light of these sort of unseen realities. It's the reality behind the reality. In the case of Revelation, this is a book that says, I actually think Revelation's a really important book for today. It's a book that says it might look like the might of Rome, Babylon as it's called in Revelation, is in control, but that's not the reality. The reality is that it is God who's in control. It might not look like it. It might look like Christianity is a kind of meager, tiny force against the might of Rome. But in actual fact, God's doing something special here and it's going to have huge consequences. God is in control. This is a really important thing. It remains significant today. It's like saying to people, don't be afraid. Hold on. God has things in control. And one day, he's going to sort out the mess that we all know we're in a very dramatic fashion. And so all those sort of rich images and symbolism and so on really play into that. It's speaking of a reality, but it's not a kind of literalistic reality. So if you read it too sort of literalistically and try to have this sort of futurist reading of it, you can get into all sorts of serious errors.
Yeah, I can imagine you'd start to overfixate on Armageddon and maybe look at political developments in the world and try and match them up with what you see going on in the book.
Yes, I think you're right, Justine. There is an overfixation on Armageddon and this sort of end of the world scenario. There's been a really unhelpful emphasis on this, especially in terms of the world's future. Now, two things to say about that. We should remember that Jesus promises that no one knows the day or the time of the last day. And so whenever you hear these sorts of predictions, if you're a Christian and you believe this to be true, then you kind of don't need to worry about it. None of us know. And there's good reason as well, and this is a really important point to make in this discussion. There's good reason to think that the biblical picture is not one of the earth being obliterated at the end. That's been a mistake of a lot of theology over the years, and it's had enormous implications. So a day of judgment is promised for sure, no doubt about that. But for the earth, there's this movement towards renewal and redemption. The picture from Revelation is actually one of heaven coming to earth, where all things will be made new in Revelation 21. It's really important because it means that things like if you care about the earth now, that matters because it's not all going sort of up in flames at the end.
Yeah, so the idea is that the earth is not going to be burned up, but it actually will be renewed, and that's really important to remember.
And that means that sort of life now takes on even greater significance, and the way we kind of live on the physical earth, the way we care for it, the way we enjoy it, has a whole lot of implications for our lives now and then going into the future.
Yeah, I'm hoping people will find that really encouraging, and also they can take from this that, you know, we won't need to rush out and stock up on our tinned goods as well. And, you know, if the world doesn't end, this means that Life and Faith is going to be back next year. So we really want to thank you for joining our discussions this year, and we look forward to seeing you again in the new year.